Welcome to episode 30 of Industry Misinterpretations with James Robertson of Syncom Systems, David Buck of Cimbron, and Michael Lucas Smith, who will be joining Syncom in 2 weeks' time. This week we had Bob Nemec, the president of STIC, on the Small Talk Industry Council to talk about what STIC's been up to for the last year and what STIC is doing with Small Talk Solutions. We also had a general conversation about a few of the sessions at Small Talk Solutions, and the conversation ranged around from there. I'd also like to thank those of you who headed over to Podcast Alley and either left a review or given us a vote on Podcast Alley. It's very nice to see that kind of feedback. If you like this podcast, head on over there and throw us a vote. You also need to do that, I guess, at the beginning of each month, the way they clear things out. If you have negative feedback, for that matter, head on over to Podcast Alley and throw a comment at us. We'd love to hear feedback one way or the other. In the meantime, please enjoy the podcast. And about that feedback, if you have any, send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com.
Hey, darling, I gotta talk to you about the things you've been putting me through now. I gotta talk to you, I gotta be explained to you. Hey,
yeah. Hey, hey, Bob, that's you?
Right.
Yep.
Hello.
That's Michael.
Hey, Bob.
And Dave, are you on the line?
I think I'm on the line. Just a sec here.
It sounds like you're on the line, Dave. Are you not sure about the whole thing?
Do you hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
I hear everybody.
It's Friday morning at 9 a.m., so you might not be sure he's on the line.
Skype is telling me that you can't hear me. I don't know how it knows, but...
Well, no, it's just telling us our preferences, Michael. So I suppose I should introduce Bob. Bob Nemec, the head of STIC right now, and what... else, what's actually your job description up there at Northwater, Bob?
I lead the development team. So I guess I'm like the manager of the systems development desk.
Okay. So why don't you get us started by letting us know what STIC's been up to the last year?
For the last year, STIC's been trying to basically get its house in order, get the financials properly taken care of, get the websites up to speed, make sure that each area is properly supported and such, and it's proven to be more of a challenge than it first looked like it would be. So things have not moved as quickly as we'd like, but we're at the point now where the financials are being properly taken care of. Bob Cherniak from Cherniak Software, a Toronto outfit, is the STIC treasurer. He's also implemented an online membership payment option, which is a new thing for STIC, which makes life a lot easier for trying to get members to sign up and corporate members to sign up. The websites, through various trials and tribulations, are mostly online and getting more current as we're working on the content. We've had an unfortunate problem with the STIC.org domain name because of it expiring while we were trying to do the transition. But we do have the smalltalkindustrycouncil.org as a website. We've got smalltalksolutions.com that Thomas Seltzer is taking care of. And it's eventually, you know, it's going to fill in with archive information from previous conferences and probably other features that we'll add over time. And as of yesterday, we've got smalltalkcentral.com back online, where Mark Roberts is... getting that to be kind of a utility site with links and content, tutorials, that kind of stuff. So all of this is moving towards STIC fulfilling its small talk advocacy mandate of by having information out there, by having a membership base that can help contribute to that effort, and now working towards helping get the Small Talk Solutions conference up to speed.
Yeah. Speaking of the conference, why don't you mention what the primary benefit of STIC membership is for people who join up?
Yes, indeed. If you are interested in coming to the Small Talk Solutions Conference, a STIC membership, which costs $40 U.S., an individual membership, will get you a 25% discount on the conference. So that's a pretty good deal. Conference cost is 900 and something U.S., and you get 25% off that. So it's a good value for the dollar.
Okay. And you can go right now to smalltalkindustrycouncil.org, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, now also Small Talk Central is online, as you mentioned. I should take some responsibility for the fact that it doesn't have RSS feeds yet, because Mark is waiting for me to port my... that there's a portion of bottom feeder he uses for that that I haven't gotten around to porting to 7.5 yet, which is what he's using as the foundation for that website. But I can go ahead and delegate that blame down to Michael because it's using net resources.
Hey, do we need to put some sort of disclaimer in here? Because, James, you're also on the board of Stick, aren't you?
Yes, I am on the board of Stick. So should we put a disclaimer in?
Yeah, just for the people listening, you know, we just had a back and forth pretty much advertising Stick to the bone between two people on the board of Stick. So
yeah, but there's nothing up my sleeve. It's too early for there to be anything up my sleeve.
And, yeah. And a bit later in the podcast, we're going to be talking about Smalltalk Solutions, which we also have a hand in. I think everybody here is giving talks at Smalltalk Solutions.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Dave, you mentioned your talk at Smalltalk Solutions last week, so we don't need to really cover that in any depth right now. Michael, why don't you tell us what you're talking about?
Okay, so I'm just going to be talking about interfacing with C in general, like the way you do it in the various different Smalltalks and how that differs between the different Smalltalks, as well as how we interface with C-sharp and or .NET more specifically, COM, also connecting to COM. And I'm also going to go into, you know, a little bit of detail about how other programming languages link to C to kind of compare what's happened in Smalltalk with what's happening in the rest of the world. And on top of that, then kind of discuss where we can go with our C interfacing. But I'm also going to be, you know, linking this into real examples of C interfaces that I've written over the last 6 or 7 years, and also various optimization techniques to getting the most out of the C interfaces and what actually makes a C interface run slow in Smalltalk, which is always some, you know, an interesting area of contention when people think they know how to optimize a C interface and they discover that it's not actually slow the way they thought it might be.
Yeah, I saw your post about that on the blog, and there was actually some internal discussion about that here at CINCOM, because I think it's not that there's any internal discussion that you're incorrect. It's mostly that I think even our own engineers fall into that trap of assumption about things based on longstanding preconceived notions.
Well, I mean, there's this assumption that the VM must add a whole bunch of overhead because it marshals and then does calls and builds stacks and rips the stack apart and all that kind of stuff. But if you go into the effort of figuring out what the cost of those things are, like Bryce Cavies does and Elliot had done, to figure out, you know, what does that actually cost, and then figure out what is actually taking the time, you discover that the C calls interface in VisualWorks is actually pretty fast. I think it's about 4 times slower than having a native linked plugin or an actual primitive. So that's pretty good without any further kind of optimization. That I know Andreas Valud is certainly looking into optimizing C calls to make them run even faster, perhaps doing some sort of AELSTA sort of stuff. But the real-time killer is actually generation of garbage. So a single C call that you will make will seem very fast, but if you make it a million times over, it starts to slow down. And it slows down because you generate so much garbage very quickly that the garbage collectors then going to spend a whole bunch of time getting rid of stuff. So that sort of stuff I'll be covering in my talk, basically.
Yeah, that actually goes back to something we've mentioned on this podcast before, that the profiler, and this pretty much is a point that goes without regard to whether you're using Smalltalk or anything else, the profiler certainly is your friend because it will tell you whether your assumptions are well-founded or not. In this case, it sounds like you think our assumptions have not historically been well-founded.
Well, they may have been at one point in time. Certainly people who really know what they're doing when it comes to building C interfaces can build them in such a way that you don't generate much garbage at all. So that kind of C interface, then the only time you've got left is actually the C marshalling time. Now, in older machine architectures, you know, back in the 386 days, sorts of pipelining that the CPUs do now, they didn't do back then. It came in about the Pentium time. So the overhead that we talked about earlier about creating stack frames and marshalling, demarshalling, all that kind of stuff, it really did cost you a fair bit of time. So it's a bit of a moving target thing. You know, what is required to optimize things now is different to what it was like back then.
Yeah. And back then probably was more like 10, 15 years ago, maybe even 20 years ago in this case. Let's jump back to Smalltalk Solutions for a minute. If we look at the first day, we've actually got an interesting talk where we're trying to bridge the gap between us and other dynamic language communities. We've got a Ruby guy coming in, Chad Fowler, to talk about Ruby for Smalltalkers, and in particular, it looks like he's going to talk about Rails.
Yeah, that's a talk that I'm interested in going to. I've been reading up on Ruby. I've read up on Rails. And I'm also interested to see how Alan Knight's GLARP changes sort of relate to Rails or their active record. We tend to get into this mode where people get into one technology, like Smalltalk or Seaside, and they don't get to see what other people are doing in other technologies. And
you know that active record stuff is now in Python as well.
Oh, it is.
The whole active record framework has been ported to Python, you mean?
Well, no, the technique, the pattern. So, you know, it's not the exact same framework, but the whole idea of having active record. So it's really good that GLARP is doing active record types of stuff as well. And, I mean, he should actually call it that. I think he does. He calls it GLARP active record, doesn't he?
I think Alan calls it active record, yeah. He gave a talk at the user conference we had in Frankfurt in December, and I could go back and look at – actually, you could go back and listen to the podcast. It's in the archives. And I'm pretty sure he talked. Actually, it's one of the only podcasts from the user conference where you can hear the speaker. So I guess I should tip my hat to Alan for that. But in any case, yeah, I think he calls it active record.
That's good.
I think my question for the Ruby for Smalltalkers talk, well, Rails especially is more configuration by convention. And I know that'll take you a long ways to getting an application running. How far can you push that?
And, pretty far.
Will it take you all the way, basically? Yeah, I understand it is pretty far. If you do have, for instance, existing databases you want to interface to, though, that have their own structure already, will Rails allow you to interface to that?
I can't speak for active record in Ruby, but I can say that those techniques that are used by active record, we use them with TopLink at Wizard, on a project called Communities Online, to transform our model completely and then eventually our UI until the entire application was rewritten. But for a while there, we were using the old database model and, yeah, using those techniques on top of TopLink, which is basically like using Active Record on top of GLARP, it worked. You know, we could interface with that stuff completely without any trouble whatsoever. So, yeah, I mean, if we could do it and we didn't build an active record, we built, you know, almost an active record sort of thing, then I'm sure active record in Ruby can do it just fine as well.
Well, even at the user interface level, if you think back about the way Smalltalk has historically done this, at least VisualWorks, you know, if you're hooking up GUIs and domains, that's all done by the convention of assuming that an instance variable name maps to the name of that GUI component on the screen. That's all done more or less by convention. So there's a long history in Smalltalk of things by convention rather than configuration.
I was going to say the aspect of this that I'm curious as well, we had a Toronto Smalltalk user group meeting last night, and Chris Cunningham was one of the attendees, and he's learning Smalltalk, and his bias is like the web-based side of Smalltalk. So he's looking at what kind of tools are out there, he's learning Seaside and so on. So Ruby and Ruby on Rails and what else is available to him is something that he's comparing it to. And he's brand new to Smalltalk. Like he started about a year ago. And his comments on this has more to do with kind of the things that he has to roll himself in the Smalltalk community versus if he wants to learn Ruby on Rails, if he wants to make use of persistent data, that kind of thing. He's got reasonably well-defined documents or online resources and so on to follow those paths and kind of learn how to do it in the Ruby space. His comment on comparing it to what's happening on the Smalltalk side is that if he didn't know us, like the Smalltalk community in Toronto, or if he hadn't hooked up with individuals to help him through this, there's no way he could have learned how to do it himself. So in addition to looking at the kind of the mechanics of how you can map to database and so on, there's an interesting question of how Ruby on Rails has made it easy for someone to start fresh by following kind of well-defined conventions, saying, here's your template, go ahead and do your application on top of this.
And they also pull in the libraries that you're going to use. I mean, if you're going to do persistence in Squeak, you've got dozens of OO and non-OO based persistence libraries that you can choose from, all of which have varying degrees of version control, varying degrees of documentation, varying degrees of workingness, and varying degrees of compatibility, right? So when you pull up Ruby on Rails, as with many kind of Ruby libraries, there isn't a plethora of options. Because it's open source, the option has been worked on by a great many people, not so much individual project leaders. I mean, sure, there's there is always that, but the culture they started Ruby in, and Ruby kind of picked up on, was this shared open source ideal where more than one person is involved in a project and takes it somewhere. Whereas the Squeak open source approach has only recently started getting there. And to date, most of the open source code that you would find in Squeak predates most of the open source developer movement, you know, the OSS sort of stuff. So you would find a piece of code written by some researcher that works, but he's the only person who's ever contributed to it. But he's put it out there as open source. Yeah, so it's a bit of a different kind of community ethos, really. And so I guess that does contribute a lot to the problem.
Yeah, that problem is not really specific even just to the Smalltalk community. I mean, if you look at some of the people coming to Ruby from Java, a lot of the reason they like Ruby on Rails is that a lot of their choices are limited and constrained. They see a specific road they can go down, as opposed to thinking, well, which one of the 20 or 25 object relational mapping frameworks should I pick to hook up behind the already complex J2EE thing that I've got? So this idea of having a convention over configuration and, you know, a simple, straightforward path to go down is one that applies whether you're a niche language like Smalltalk or even if you're something as popular as Java, because giving people fewer choices that work reasonably well sometimes is the best path you can take.
I was on a Java project a while back. One of the big issues was, should we use struts? Should we use JSF? Should we use faces, my faces? What kind of technology are we going to use to build this application? And that took several weeks to resolve.
Yeah, sometimes when you give people too much choice, it doesn't really help matters a lot. But let's go back to the Smalltalk Solutions conference for a minute. I wanted to move past the Ruby talk. There's also on Monday, it turns out there's really only three things going on. We have the two tutorials, which I should mention the other one is Joseph Pellerin's Scrum methodology. And the third thing is the Smalltalk Solutions coding contest, which Andres Valude is running this year.
Well, I'm competing, so just don't say anything.
All right, so that's going to go on from 1 to 5 in the afternoon. I guess it's going to run pretty much the way we've done this before, where there's going to be a live contest in the room for those 4 hours where people are going to have to come up with some kind of solution. And then there are three prizes. Actually, it's iPod Video, iPod Nano, and iPod Shuffle. Those are the three prizes, so there are pretty good prizes for this, so like Michael, if you're interested in showing up and competing, go ahead and show up and compete.
Now, do you know if there's any pre-conference part of the competition this year?
Yes, there is. There's a, I think it lasts 2 weeks. I'll just bring up my calendar and double check. It's a very long time, so you're not rushed to compete. You know, it's not like it's a time-limited thing where you've only got a few hours on a particular weekend to get some sort of solution in. You've got a fair amount of time to get a solution in that you're happy with. You know, some people will be picked to compete at Smalltalk Solutions. And it's going from the 13th of April, which is next Friday, to the 22nd of April, which is a Sunday. So, yeah, I mean, there's a big chunk of time there to feel comfortable in producing some sort of output. And, you know, having done this before, and having run this before, I'd encourage anyone who has even a passing interest in it to submit something, because you don't have to produce the world's best work. It's a competition. Everybody's nerves are on end. And more than likely, the more the merrier when it comes to the actual competing day at Smalltalk Solutions, where you kind of sit in a sort of fishbowl and type away and see what you can do.
So moving past that then to the other talks here at Smalltalk Solutions, I should mention that I'm giving a talk. It's going to be a fairly mundane talk this year. I'm giving a roadmap talk on Syncom Smalltalk, although I guess given the fact that I've changed the roadmap and tried to move away from some of the specifics that I've had in the past, people who have not seen me give the roadmap talk in a while should show up and see what I have to say, because it's going to be a fairly to-the-point kind of talk. I'm not even building PowerPoint slides. I'm just going to be in a room asking questions and laying out what it is we're planning on doing. And if you're over on the VA side, it looks like they're giving a talk, Eric Layberg is giving a talk for the roadmap they have, not at the same time, obviously, but sometime during the week, he's giving a roadmap talk for VA Smalltalk. So there's roadmap information regardless of which flavor you're coming from here.
Yeah, actually, the schedule has changed since our last podcast, and you're talking at the same time as I am in this current schedule. So
that happened to me last year, Dave. Yeah.
See, I encourage people not to go to the Syncom room. No, it's fine.
Well, you know, Bob's the stick head here, so we can blame Bob.
Unfortunately, I had nothing to say about the schedule. That was the conference people. I mean, they're the ones that stuck our panel discussion on in the evening, so I had no say in that at all.
Well, speaking of the panel discussion, who's going to be on that panel?
What's it about, guys? Come
on. Yeah, well, I can give you a little bit of a it evolved a little bit, but not that much. I mean, the original idea was came from feedback to a blog entry where I was just lamenting the fact that most small talk advocacy discussions end up focusing on the technical benefits of using Smalltalk. So as a developer, it's easier to handle the complexity of a domain model because of our syntax and because of how we do inheritance and polymorphism and yada, yada, yada. That tends not to be a useful argument when you're approaching a manager who is responsible for the delivery of projects, but is not the developer of those projects. So I was lamenting the fact that we didn't have good business comments, good business talking points to make when trying to market Smalltalk to the decision makers who tend not to be interested in just the low-level technical issues. So feedback to that was, well, why don't we talk about that at Smalltalk Solutions and do something there? So that's where the original idea for the panel came forward, and I asked if a few people that were responsible for kind of or did things on the business side of Smalltalk would be interested in speaking to that. So David, you're one of the people on the panel, which makes sense. As a consultant, you're always having to make a case and you're having to, you know, sell the business side of a solution. So you'd have a perspective on that. Suzanne Fortman is an obvious choice from Syncom because she is the marketing side of the Smalltalk at Syncom. From instantiations, we have Ed Clemens, who's also on the marketing side, but he's actually being fairly nicely proactive on this. He's going to, in addition to David, they've been exchanging some emails on this and kind of coming forward with experiences of trying to sell Smalltalk to a business and what kind of feedback they got and what the issues were and so on. And I'll be kind of sitting there as well, just kind of keeping things going. Now, what happened with this is when they were scheduling the panel discussion, they got back to me and said, well, we're going to have to put it in the evening. Do you also want to have a stick general meeting in the evening on another night? And I said, well, that's not going to work very well because two evening sessions that are basically targeting the same audience are probably redundant. So I said, I still want to have this as a marketing panel discussion, but just put a preamble on that saying everybody's welcome that wants to speak to what's going on with Stick. So that's why the write-up changed a little bit. Well, what I'd like to avoid in the meeting is to have one of those experiences where everybody's in the room and most people are saying Stick should do more, and the people that are trying to get Stick to do stuff are saying, well, we need your help, and it just kind of goes back and forth, and nothing really gets talked about that's substantial. So my intent here is to try to push the idea that out of this two-hour discussion, we should at least have some talking points. We should have some idea of what the issues are in marketing Smalltalk to the decision makers. What are good ways of approaching that problem? What are the targets that we might want to target? If you have an opportunity to be a Smalltalk advocate and there are people that are willing to listen, who are the ones that will probably be interested, and what should you say to them, and where are the resources that you could tap into to help you make your case? Those are the kind of things I'm hoping get talked about.
Well, I can tell you I have a simple answer for the sort of person who says Stick should do more, and that is that if you want Stick to do more, really, you have to be willing to do more yourself. There are plenty of possibilities for building open source Smalltalk applications, for instance. I mean, Michael and I have been working on a Twitter client recently, and we've done a fair amount of collaboration on things like bottom feeder. So there are plenty of things that can be worked on if you're willing to put in a few hours of your own on your own time. I mean, look at what James Savage does with the Smalltalk jobs report. He puts together a whole lot of information, and it actually takes him a fair amount of time to do that. So if you want Stick to help you, I think you have to be willing to step up.
I should point out as well that another member of the panel is Monty Williams from Gemstone.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I forget Monty?
I don't think
I heard
Monty's name.
My apologies. Of course,
there.
Monty, sir.
So we have people from Gemstone, from Syncom, Instantiations, and myself, and independent consultants. So.
Well, you know why you forgot Monty. I'm looking at the Smalltalk Solutions talks, and there's the talk on the top of my screen is about the impedance mismatch between objects and relational. And since Monty's from Gemstone, there's no impedance mismatch, so you forgot.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
So that should be an interesting discussion.
Yeah, sounds like it. And I, like I said, Dave, since I'm not on the panel, I'm going to be sitting in the back with my tomatoes and rocks.
let's throw the tomatoes first. Rocks can hurt too much.
Well, so anything else interesting that I haven't brought up that anybody wants to see? I mean, we've mentioned the Cairo project thing that Travis is talking about. I think we've beaten that one to death. Does anybody else have anything they've seen in the schedule for Smalltalk Solutions that they're really interested in attending?
One thing that's not on the schedule, but it's part of the trade show, is Chris Cunningham, the person I'd mentioned earlier that's kind of learning Squeak and getting into Smalltalk. He has arranged to have a Squeak booth at the trade show that he's also staffing. And basically, it's something he took care of himself. He's got it. It's referenced on the squeak.org site. He's getting buy-in from the Squeak community. So on his own, when more power to him, he's gone out, taken care of this, and we ask that at the trade show that the Squeak booth be in the small talk corner, if you like, so it should be near the vendor booths as well. So that's an excellent addition to the trade show.
Okay. Well, actually, I suppose I should mention one other thing that I just stumbled on. I didn't even realize this was here. There's going to be somebody talking about the one laptop per child, since it's got eToys on it.
Yes, Bert Freudenberg. That'll be on the Wednesday morning at 8:30.
Yeah, of course, I'll still be having coffee then, but...
Well, there's the guy from England who does the modeling of gearboxes and stuff.
Yeah.
That stuff is really cool. If you get a chance to go and watch that, yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, he gave a talk on that last year. That's Dave Dampoon, right?
Yeah, I missed his talk, so he showed me at one of the various bars afterwards. And then that was actually, it wasn't last year, that was the year before, that was in Orlando.
Yes. Now, you're right, that was Orlando, but yeah, he gave a cool talk, and he had a good audience. That was actually something that was well attended.
I have a general question. Is there going to be a camp small talk at the Smalltalk Solutions?
Bob, do you have any idea?
Nothing's been talked about, and no one's brought it up, so as of this point, no, but... Knowing how the room schedule is working and such, if we wanted to have access to a room in the evening as part of after-hours use for Camp Smalltalk, we could probably arrange it on fairly short notice, but nobody stepped up to ask.
So probably what could be done is somebody could just set up a BOF each evening at the same time for that kind of thing if they really wanted to.
Yes.
How are we going to stiff Anthony with the bill this year?
Well, first you got to get him to come. I think he's on guard this year after last year's episode.
I believe there's some sort of baseball game happening, and I'd like to organize for some people to come and watch Second City if people are interested in that one of the nights as well.
I'd love to. That would be great. I've seen Second City before, and they're fabulous.
They're not like Saturday Night Live in the sense that they range from good to sucking every couple of years, are they?
I've only seen them once, James, so they were recommended to me, so they must have been good at least one other time in their past.
Yeah, well, Saturday Night Live was good once, too, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we've seen Second City in the Toronto area several times, and it's always been worthwhile, so I'd recommend it.
Just don't make it on the same night as the stick panel.
Yes, indeed.
Well, no, we're going to have Bob get up in front and do a Second City act for us at that stick panel.
Hey, whatever it takes, man. One final point. One more thing that Stick's doing for the conference, and I forgot to mention this, is that this year we want to make sure that we have something to give people to read about what Stick is, what Smalltalk is, who the vendors are, and such. So to that effort, we're putting together a brochure to hand out to people, and all the vendors will have that available. So that should be wrapped up in the next 2 weeks or so. And I'm just putting the final touches on that. So that'll be a nice kind of marketing effort on our part so that as the other trade show people walk by our booth so we can give them a few things in addition to vendor material.
Yeah, and I can say that as a representative of one of the vendors, Bob's been pretty proactive about bugging us to get that information to him. All right. Anybody have anything else that they need to get in before we wrap this up?
I'm planning on going to the Seaside Experience Report that Boris Popov is giving. And that's on Wednesday.
Yeah, that should be pretty interesting because I had him and I guess the guy he works for on a couple weeks ago to talk about their... You set that up, as I recall.
York Beekman.
They talked about their usage of S3, which I guess is not that innovative in and of itself, but I hadn't even really known that there were that many people beyond small startups doing that.
Well, I mean, I found it interesting, the whole S3 thing.
No, I meant that it's not that interesting in the sense that it's not technically difficult to hook up to something like S3, but what's interesting about it is the mere fact that that kind of service is breaking out.
I've got some stuff, you know, here not about Smalltalk Solutions. I think we should throw a big thank you out there to the people who are voting for us on the podcast, Ali.
Yes, we're in fourth place right now.
Yeah, I don't know what happened with that. That's just weird.
We got some very nice feedback on that site as well. Thank you to those people.
Yeah, and I guess if you like the podcast, keep coming back to Podcast Alley and vote. I can say this just because I've heard this on other podcasts. Apparently they clear the voting range out every month, so beginning of next month you'll all have to come back and vote again.
That's probably why we're in the position we're in, because it's likely that the other podcasts are not getting votes this particular month.
Well, that and the poison darts I threw at all the other leads of those podcasts.
Ah. Oh, look out for Oscar Ninja.
I don't think we can compete with people like that. All right. Well, it looks like with that, we've exhausted our level of interest for the week. All right. Well, I want to thank Bob for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Bob.
Thank you, Bob.
And I will see you guys next week.
Yeah, see you, Dave. See you, James.
Bye.
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 Bye-bye.
Stay tuned for this week's Small Talk Jobs Report with James Savage.
I'm James T. Savage, and this is the Small Talk Jobs Report. First, a request for help. Being part of the Small Talk community has provided me with the best jobs I've ever had. Over 2 years ago, I found that no one was actively tracking Small Talk jobs, and that none of the major job boards did what the Smalltalk community needed or wanted. Since then, I've been spending on average 14 or more hours per week in an effort to give other people the same opportunities I've had. While I don't believe any of that time was wasted, increasing family obligations and a shareware app that I want to write have begun to compete for my attention. I need some helping hands to take over some of the job tracking and database management duties. At the time of this recording, I have one offer of help from a squeaker in Switzerland, but I'd like some more helpers in order to better distribute the work. If this service is important to you, then please volunteer some of your time so we can give back to the Smalltalk community. And who knows, I might even have time to read a book again. As for the current state of the jobs database, there's been a huge uptick in advertised positions in the financial sector in Sydney, Australia. Sandstone Technology has a multitude of positions open for people who have experience with J2EE, Smalltalk, Web Services, and OOAD. First Staff Personnel Consultants has an OO Architect Banking Insurance position open in Dublin, Ireland. And Ferguson Consulting has a Developer Business Analyst position in St. Louis, Missouri. These Smalltalk positions and many others are currently listed in the Smalltalk Jobs database. For more details or to find out how you can volunteer your time, please visit my blog, Message Sends with an Undefined Object. Good luck with your job hunting.
And that about wraps up this week's podcast. I'll be bringing all this gear up with me to Smalltalk Solutions, so in a couple of weeks when we're all in Toronto, I should be able to record a few live sessions and dole those out over the next couple of weeks. I don't know whether we'll be able to record the sessions themselves. I'd have to talk to the show organizers about that. In any case, I'll get done what I can get done. In the meantime, have fun with Smalltalk.
Darling, I gotta talk to you about the things you've been putting me through now. I gotta talk to you, I gotta be explained to you.